Welcome to the Automators Podcast. I'm David Sparks. Rosemary Orchard couldn't make it this week. And when I knew she wasn't going to make it, the first person that came to my mind happened to be available. Welcome back to the show, Matt Casanelli.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure as always.
Oh, Matt, I'm so glad that you were able to come in today and talk to us. You are one of my very favorite automators. Is that a thing? Can you be one of my favorites?
Sure. I mean, you guys made it a thing. Thank you.
Yeah, why not? Matt is a shortcuts guru. He worked at Apple for a while, helping them out when the shortcuts team first came into Apple. Since then, he's left. MattCasanelli.com, I believe, is the website.
MatthewCasanelli.com, but yeah.
Matthew, I'm sorry.
I should get both. I've never thought of that.
You should get both. But anyway, MatthewCasanelli.com. Great place to learn shortcuts. He shares a ton of them. He's got a membership. I'm a member. I'm a paying member. Matt, did you know that I joined?
I'm pretty sure.
And he does all sorts of cool stuff with shortcuts and Apple automation. So, of course, if Rose couldn't make it today, Matt's the guy. And we have a lot on our agenda today. I'm particularly interested in talking about focus modes with you, Matt. But I think before we get there, let's just catch up. I haven't seen you for a while. What are you automating these days and what are you excited about?
Oh, I mean, everything as always. I think especially this time of year around May, I've had the whole year to settle in and go deep and also get fully distracted by everything as well. So
yeah,
I think the biggest thing I did I don't even remember when last year was I tried to simplify and removed a bunch of my shortcuts. And then after I did that, it was a huge mistake. And so I added them all back. And now I have thousands on thousands, but there's some like high level stuff that I think Apple could do to help something like that not be necessary for people. And then even app shortcuts is a major feature that I dove into this year because I did some consulting work with indie developers and really helped them implement like the best version of, I worked with the team at Structured and we kind of built out their app shortcuts, and I even discovered some features that I didn't really know existed or like Apple barely mentioned in the documentation. So that's been pretty fun just because I think that's setting up for the future. Like App Intents, the API that powers app shortcuts, is everything that's widgets and stuff like that. So going forward, I think that's going to be a major key API that people need to know about, and just where it also helps you like the everyday person get shortcuts or like do what I'm doing in shortcuts without having to set it all up. And so I'm almost making examples that I want developers to implement so you don't have to use my shortcuts too. But there's tons and tons.
Yeah. I mean, and just to back up on that a little bit, like you're known for some of your really cool shortcuts, but you often have to, you know, build your own structures to make those shortcuts work because the actions don't exist. Mm-hmm. So when I hear that you're actively working with developers to make that easier, I'm all for that. I mean, I think that is something that we need more of. So at this point we've got shortcuts on iPhone, iPad, and Mac. So it's across all the platforms. And I want to come back to shortcuts for Mac, but just the story of app support and developers getting on board with shortcuts. How do you think we're doing at this point?
I think we or Apple are two different areas. I think it's sort of I think this year iOS 17 was an inflection point where like the shortcuts APIs got good enough or what they were kind of supposed to be the whole time, I think. So I think that's sort of created a weird situation where developers who adopted it in the years past got sort of like the half implementation and maybe not even really a lot of the return on their investment of really useful shortcuts that people can use at the end. And then now this year, like just doing more find and filtering stuff and more advanced functions that shortcuts can even handle memory wise and things like that, I think is a lot more improved. And then just that same thing of creating a shortcuts experience that the user doesn't even have to set up. And it's really just Siri. Like app shortcuts is their Siri strategy. And I think people don't necessarily understand that. I mean, who knows with AI this year too, like they're going to do a lot more there, but at least for developers, they need to adopt app shortcuts in order to provide Siri actions for their users. But that story isn't told clearly to developers, and how they implement it, I think, is just, I think it, they just kind of like implied some parts, or like maybe if you didn't catch that one line, you wouldn't understand that like all the entities from an app can be provided and generate app shortcuts automatically, or even just end user education. Those app shortcuts that are created for you, you can add those to your home screen right away and have these like advanced, like somebody was asking me just to message your partner, you can go into the messages app shortcuts and add it to your home screen right away, and it'll have their face on the home screen instead of you trying to take a picture and put it into the shortcuts implement add to home screen implementation. So like they just need a lot more user and developer education on the APIs and what you can do now, because then once you build it all, like what we did with structured is you can now find and get all your tasks, edit them, and do these all advanced kind of things as essentially like workflow day users, kind of the power user side. And then the regular people can just kind of say like, open my tasks for today, and it works, and they don't even have to have ever even open shortcuts.
Yeah, I feel like there is always been an advocacy problem with automation at Apple. Like they've had the tools for a long time. I mean, you know, AppleScript was a very powerful automation tool, but you know, they've never really advocated hard on it, and almost like developer support for that. I almost feel like that needs to be like a separate team that would go out to developers and say, "Hey, let us help you put this in." I was just the other day looking at SoundSource from, you know, Rogue Amoeba, and they have their shortcut support on Mac has given you an entire suite of audio controls on your Mac. I mean, everything you can think of that you want to do in shortcuts automation, if you install SoundSource, is there. It's like 30 something actions. And like, how come other developers are not jumping on that? And is it that they don't know? Has Apple made it too difficult for them? Well, I would argue that Apple's made it a lot easier, but it still is something that requires work and updating. Like, you got to keep up with it. But
even thinking about this, what I was just talking about, is they don't get the benefit of app shortcuts. That whole side that is worth implementing for iOS and iPad or iPhone, iPad, there isn't a feature for that on the Mac. So they kind of only have like put in this work for power users, which is, you'd think, would be their bread and butter anyways. But yeah, I mean, just advocacy there and examples, and honestly from Apple, like they need Final Cut Pro to have actions so that developers can understand, oh, I can do this.
Yeah.
But not just put out shortcuts for Mac and say it's the future of automation and then just wait for that future to arrive. Like, that's kind of where we're at now, is they need to make that feature the present.
Are we at a position now where you expected, or are we not as far along as you wanted to be? I mean, kind of, what's your assessment of the overall app support from third-party apps?
On iOS, it's definitely getting better. Like, I notice every time I make it down to the app shortcut section, because I have so many folders, there's more and more every time I try it out, which is cool. I think making it, I mean, the action button was, I think, was a good impetus for developers to at least try, because then they could have one action available in that action button setup screen. So I think the action button coming to more iPhones would really boost people forward, in, just in terms of like, I should do this now. And then now that, what's always hard with Apple, and even having worked there for like a little bit, I can like understand now, is like, they put out the feature so that they have a year of development onto it, and then it kind of gets pushed wider, and that's really when it's ready. So I think even like the action button didn't, it kept like timing out and stuff like that. So like, I had a bunch of issues with my shortcuts, just even functioning properly when I was using it. So I think they're kind of getting there. And then as they give more and more incentive, I think that's why you can sort of see their development strategy is like, by app shortcuts or app intents being the widgets API and the shortcuts API, and probably it's at least their Siri Suggestions APIs powers that too. So if they're doing anything with intelligence this year and AI, I think it's going to be powered by App Intents. And I think that's going to be like, all right, literally everybody has to use this API now. And so why not build shortcuts on top of it too?
Yeah, why not?
I mean, it's kind of like that's, I hate it's that, like though, you right? already are doing it. So now suddenly, oh, plus you bonus get shortcuts and then you get iPhone action button, you get it app shortcuts on the Apple Vision Pro. So like it's a smart strategy in the long run. And then I think the developers have to catch up and I think the users need to demand it as well. I think that's something that like people like us shout about it, but regular people also like can motivate their teams to do it by asking for it.
Yeah. And I do think that, you know, there aren't enough people taking advantage of automation and asking for it, but the people who are doing it are vocal.
Yeah, it's like a chicken and egg always.
Yeah, I agree, but at least it's there. Like when you look at, like, let's look at historically, like you had AppleScript, which was probably the most powerful thing they ever did in terms of user automation and the least adopted because it was quirky and you had to understand it. Like the problem with AppleScript is it was too simple for developers and too complex for normal users. And it just never got the widespread adoption, I think, that they had hoped. And then there was Automator, right? Automator to me was the precursor of shortcuts, Lego block-based automation, but it just never got the buy-in. And not only did it not get the buy-in from app developers, it didn't get the buy-in at Apple. I have this picture in my mind of Sal Segoyan like running around Apple trying to convince people to write plugins for auto.
Yeah. I mean, that's what's funny about all the like internal stuff is like, I could have done that job at Apple of the internal development stuff. But then I also, it's like, I wanted to do like three separate jobs and you kind of need one person to do that whole thing. So it's always just interesting. Like the gallery alone is like, that's kind of what I'm doing now in many ways is a gallery of shortcuts and they still have my shortcuts in the gallery that were from workflow. So that whole thing still needs a lot of work as well.
But, you know, shortcuts to kind of bring it forward is the best of this, right? It's accessible to normal people. It's not probably as powerful, but it is very addressable if you get the buy-in from the app developers, you know, like the example I was using with SoundSource, or you can, you know, pick any shortcut, like Drafts is another one. There's plenty of apps that have gone like way in with shortcuts. Better Touch Tools, another one I always like to talk about because they're so deep with their shortcut support. And when you get that, that just gives you more, you know, go back to the Lego analogy, it gives you more blocks. It gives you more ways to tie things together without having to resort to writing command line scripts or AppleScript scripts or other, you know, goofy things that you need to do.
I will say, I love that side of the Mac. That's one thing that, like, it seems like Mac users sort of are like, oh, I don't want to resort to that. And as someone who came from iPadOS, I'm like, I can press keyboard shortcuts with shortcuts. Like, I'll build a ton of those. And then now I can open an app, press five keyboard shortcuts using an Apple script, and then also, like, remotely trigger that shortcut from my iPad using run script over SSH. So, like, the whole deep side of shortcuts for Mac, I'm still barely tapping into because I like almost don't know what I don't know. And about like the command line and stuff like that, I have no idea how to take advantage of that. And so if anyone wants to, like, let's do it, just because there is so much more like opportunity to tie in with shortcuts. And for me, it's the same thing that what the workflow team was, they took abstract notions that were available and then made actions out of them. I'm making a full shortcut, but it's still like, I didn't know I could even do that on the Mac. Now that script is just a single shortcut. And now like 100,000 people can use this shortcut instead of you need to know the command line utility for it.
Yeah, so exactly.
That whole, like the potential and the depth of shortcuts for Mac is still barely tapped into. And there's still so much there. I think on iOS and iPadOS, like people are ready for it. And I think they just don't know what they don't know in the same way. And then there's, we come out and we're like, here's 50 ways to run one shortcut, 300 actions and like thousands of examples. Like we have like too much there, and it is like we need a AI action to synthesize it all for us.
Well, we're going to talk about AI in a minute, but I do think for a lot of users, so I kind of like to lean into starting out smaller, you know, making simple shortcuts. And I think when people can build their own, it's very empowering, even if it is something that just sends a text to your kids or whatever. You know, anything to get people in there. Like, remember when everybody went nuts to customize their app icons and suddenly everybody discovered shortcuts?
Yeah, I think that's the pop culture side of it, and having it just like enter the collective consciousness is, I think, a major thing that shortcuts needs. And I mean, I just love, I don't know if you follow Stephen Robles's videos, but he's doing an excellent job of just being like, here's some shortcuts, check it out. Do you want more? Check comments and I'll respond to it. And like, people are there for that and they just don't know that it's available. So I think though, like something like Threads getting shortcut support, like these apps having the major mainstream ones, YouTube getting better shortcut support, like those kind of things, I think would help people understand the value of it and get further than I've made shortcuts that do that for them. But then it's like, I need to like hand it to YouTube and be like, go turn this into app shortcuts, because if you can just automatically jump into your watch later list, that stuff is going to be like, oh yeah, why not do that all the time? But instead, it's like they have to know about people like us in order to figure it out. So
yeah. And the problem is those big platforms, there's politics involved and all kinds of weird stuff going on.
Yeah. I mean, they also just the same thing. They don't know it. They think it's going to be a lot of work, and it isn't necessarily sometimes. I think knowing what to do is where a lot of developers struggle, rather than the actual work it takes to implement it. It's just like, what should I make? What are like common ways people do this? And then it's just like, for your particular category, it's always going to be different than someone else. So like, honestly, that's why I'm trying to just help you, because I like you and I just kind of know inherently, but that's just from 10 years of workflows and shortcuts that like anyone who's a developer coming into it and just like opening up the documentation pages is going to be like, what? There's like 5 different versions of the shortcuts API. It's like, what even is this? And it's like the last one is the most important.
This episode of Automators is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help you find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. Whenever I've been looking for a job or been looking at somebody who's being hired for a role or potentially being hired for a role, it's really nice to be able to just go and look at their profile and see the things that they've marked down as important. But also, it's nice to be able to use a little bit of automation to have the system help you find the people that are right for you. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. It helps you hire professionals that you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. LinkedIn also knows that small businesses are wearing so many hats and might not have the time or resources to hire. That's why they're constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. It's easy to see why 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/automators. That's linkedin.com/automators to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
You mentioned earlier that you have an action button shortcut. We just got done talking about ours on the show. Tell us about your action button. What are you doing with it?
That was a perfect episode, because Rosemary is essentially doing what I'm doing, but I found a solution that can help her. So
okay,
she talked about a whole setup where she has separate folders of shortcuts, and then she has one action button shortcut that just gets those folders and adds them to a variable and presents it as a big list. But she essentially said, I have way too many shortcuts in that list now. And so But this is, it's so, I mean, this is high-end shortcuts. Like, if you were in the thousands of shortcuts, this is a strategy that makes sense. Otherwise, just like, yes, this is absurd, and I can acknowledge that. But I have a folder at the top of my shortcuts full of other shortcuts that run my folders of shortcuts. It's, I can't even like describe it sometimes.
Yeah, it's like you're diving into the matrix.
But just like I have video, I have 10 folders of video shortcuts because I have different, like the beginning of the process versus the end of the process has separate steps. And so I make one shortcut called video shortcuts, and then I run that, and then that presents the list of folders and picks the shoulders. Then I can get the shortcuts from that and run it. So essentially, just to back up all the way, is my action button runs every single one of my shortcuts, depending on...
Okay.
I did set it up to inject the different contexts like you do with focus modes. So if it's video mode, I have the shortcut looks for the folder called video shortcuts. I filter the file and append that text. But yeah, then I also have, like Rose did too, a default set that's always available. And then I also just added in like my music and social media ones, because I always want, like, even if I'm in work mode, I usually want to like just turn on a song or something like that. So yeah, my action button does everything. The one that's really useful to me though, and is still just a power user thing, is that the very first shortcut in it just opens a folder from my shortcuts app. So it just presents the list, and then I can jump in quickly, because I have like 400 folders, David. It's absurd.
It's quite a nest of shortcuts.
They got to have groups. Like, and this is the thing that I'm so scared that they didn't, like, I didn't necessarily give them direct feedback about this, but they need subgroups for folders. Because if it was, I really have like 10 groups of shortcuts with multiple folders within them. And so it doesn't have to be this huge long list that is unruly. It could easily be in a subgroup, and then it would just be a lot easier to manage. And also like sort, because it keeps, I haven't had it in like 9 months, but I just updated an old iPad and all of my folders went out of order again. And I was like, no.
Yeah, that it's like, I hate that that just like kind of comes with the territory of being a shortcuts power user. Like these points of friction where like organization you can't count on.
Yeah, and it's so, like, there really are fairly simple fixes. Or, like, simple is easy for me to say and hard to implement, but there's solutions that they need to take seriously. Because what I think probably you and Rose and I have run into is just, like, what does it look like to use shortcuts at scale? Like, do they know? Obviously, it wasn't really ever designed for 5,000 shortcuts, but, like, what does it look like when someone's a successful shortcuts user? Do they get bogged down in just managing their lists and then like understanding the titles, or their memory can't handle searching through the list? Like, I couldn't use the single widget just because it couldn't present my list of shortcuts for a long time. So like really understanding the power user experience and what does it mean to successfully adopt this tool beyond just like running one or two shortcuts a day. But like, this is an operating system for Apple devices and software, and they need to give us the tooling that other software ecosystems have. So another thing too, with all the examples and stuff, is an app store would do very well. It's obviously I'm selfishly would want it, but it is like just being able to give stuff away for free too. That's fun. And use that as a, I had released a bunch of YouTube shortcuts as a carrot to get them to add their app shortcut support. Like that's the thing we see all the time with indie developers solving that hole and motivating teams to do more, is like, we should have that power, or not power, but just like capability with this tool that to show people what they really want to use.
You know, I'd never really thought about that, but like a shortcuts app store, I guess a shortcut store, I guess you'd call it, would also allow you to shine a spotlight on developers that provide a lot of shortcut support, because their apps would be part of that. Like, oh, here's a really cool thing that does this thing, but in order to work, you've got to buy this app, you know, and like that's another way for app developers to get exposure into the store and hopefully sales. And yeah, that would make sense.
Can we start one in the EU? Is that? No.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, none of this stuff is easy. And the other question is, you know, I don't know legitimately how much support there is for automation at Apple when the rubber meets the road. I know that they must be interested in it or they wouldn't have shortcuts, you know, but how many people do they actually have working on it? Like, how much developer support are they willing to do? How much money are they going to spend, or how much of their valuable, like, public time are they going to spend on shortcuts when they've got all these other things they're trying to do and sell?
Yeah, that's something that I haven't, like, thought about enough sometimes in the past about, like, just how do they make money from this kind of thing? And that's a pretty, it seems like an original sin to say that about Apple software, because that's not typically how they make stuff, but just like investing into that ecosystem. And I think that's why I think if it is part of their AI strategy, I'm going to be more bullish than ever on it. I think that's, it's sort of like a, I'm curious where that split is. And also, like, the Shortcuts app versus the App Intents ecosystem and Siri are all kind of amorphous and overlapping. Like, there's a complicated Venn diagram there. So I think that does often explain why the Shortcuts app on one particular platform with one action that for, like, an older device, like, there's a bug there and it doesn't work. And that's not, it just isn't their highest priority. But I think something that is well worth saying on a show like this is file your feedback. And I know that's the almost like you might roll your eyes, but on the long scale, if you have ever heard me on this show and you filed feedback, it probably would be fixed by now. So, like, there is, it takes a long time, but they do listen to that kind of stuff. And also, like, we can all, like, kind of use our community effort to, like, I don't know, file your feedback and send it to me and I'll tell them to fix this also. Like, there is just, like, esoteric issues that we all know and live with every day and then they don't really run into. And so putting it into their to-do list and in their faces is definitely worth doing. Because, like, man, there's so many bugs still that if I had filed it, it would be fixed by now and I'm still dealing with it. And, like, that's, like, not my fault, but also I'm like, damn, I really should have done that. Like,
well, and another piece of this that really, in my opinion, is true is the people that are working on Shortcuts at Apple are really into it and they want it to succeed just as much as we do. And that's not always the case. I don't feel like there is as strong a team advocating for their product as much for all the products at Apple as there are for Shortcuts.
Yeah, I think that's why, like, they, I think it's well-liked, I'm pretty sure, within the company. Like, I think Apple employees use Shortcuts a lot, too. I think it's the same thing of, they do one big release a year, and they're a massive corporation, and they all have their own priorities, too. And so, like, it's not a indie team where they can just kind of focus on this. They have to, like, get buy-in, and then it is, that's where, like, the investment in it and kind of seeing the return on that investment from developers and from the end users and things like that is something that maybe they didn't necessarily see all the time, but it is, it's always a long game too. Like, they're not always, it's not like a plus or minus and did this work and then no, we're going to, like, I don't think Shortcuts is in danger. I think as a user, having a great Shortcuts experience as a heavy power user is still always, like, as fraught as it kind of always has been. And we should be pointing them towards where we want it to go, because app shortcuts and stuff and AI, they can kind of figure out on their own. But what the Shortcuts app and the user experience should be, we all know better than them. It's, like, just quite literally always been the case for me personally. I worked at Workflow, sat next to them, and used the app twice as much as they, because they're building it on the Mac. So, like, it is, like, we all have a lot more Shortcuts experience than the Shortcuts team. And so, which is crazy to say, but that's kind of just how it goes when you're a developer also. And so that's why, like, truly trying to synthesize, like, what do you actually want? Like, what's wrong versus what could it be versus what can one small team at Apple do within the next 12 months are all slightly different, and we should talk about it more and say it, because if it goes unsaid, like, I don't know, Apple employees are also experiencing the world the way the rest of us are in the last 4 years. And so, like, having someone that's just like, hey, you guys should do this and it's a good idea and they can do it feasibly, they're going to be like, sure, great, thank you. Like, why not? If there's problems with it, they won't do that part. But, like, it's not like this whole, I can't speak for them internally because I also haven't worked there in years and years, just to be clear. But, like, we can guide it as much as, like, they're building this thing that they already just landed in their lap from the workflow team. So there is, like, a symbiotic relationship with the community and what Apple's doing there.
All right. I want to shift gears because you talked about focus modes.
That was so high level. I love it, though.
Yeah, that's okay. But you talked about focus modes, and I am a constant advocate for focus modes. I don't think enough people use them. If you're interested in automation, it's an excellent trigger. As you were saying earlier, you are using it as kind of a conditional trigger with your action button. But but what are the ways you're using focus modes?
To me, focus modes is like the core of how my operating system works, especially on iPad. I think I want to see basically what we have on iPad come to Mac, and then I think it would create the same experience. And I've been testing kind of a pseudo version by just having tons and tons of spaces, but at least on iPad, and I think iPhone too, just to, like, back up a little bit, I think focus modes are the only way you can really take advantage of all that's available on your phone without getting overwhelmed. Because it's true that even for me, like 10 years ago, I had 400 apps and maybe used 10 of them on a daily basis. And now I have even more. I have 10, 20 shortcuts for every one of those apps. And it's the most common thing that probably every person who comes across me talking about having thousands of them is, how do you even use this all? And it's only because of focus modes. I previously had 16 full home screens of iPad widgets and just iPad apps. And then I even put most of my shortcuts onto those home screens using Add Home Screen at one point. Oh my God, that was dumb. And just like a waste of time, because it didn't really live long. I mean, it just wasn't really worth the effort, especially then we got widgets, and it's like I can just drop a widget and put all of them on there. Now, though, because you can't do a folder, I have to do widget stacks. And so I have stacks and stacks on every page filled with 10 instances of the shortcuts widget. But basically, part of what I do as a multi-channel content creator is it's videos, blogging, podcasts, newsletter, streaming. All of those are wildly different contexts, and they all use different apps, different workflows, and I have different shortcuts for all of them. And so I basically created dedicated screens for each one of those that are powered by those focus modes, because I don't want to see my video stuff while I'm making a podcast. And so that part where you can show and hide home screens is, to me, the only way this all works, because I'm in my podcasting mode right now and I see two screens at once. And so I only see the contextually computing relevant information. Sorry, I just had to throw the David line in there of
there you go.
The exact stuff that I need when I need it. And then it's gone when I don't. And so, like, when I start my day, I'm in personal mode and it has my lifestyle screen, my health screen, my social media one, my, like, personal media, just like music and podcasts, entertainment, and then gaming. I have separate screens for all those. And then the second 9 a.m. hits, it switches to all my work screens. But then it's like when I'm blogging, it also hides my podcasting screen and shows my music screen, because I can listen to music while I do that. And so, like, my devices totally change depending on what I'm doing. And I have all my shortcuts just available sitting right there for me.
Yeah, I just feel like focus modes are so... And they're not that hard to implement. You know, I was just telling you before we recorded, I had a friend write me who's buying a new phone. He's getting one of these dumb phones. You know how they make the phones now that don't do anything, and giving up his iPhone. And I said, have you ever tried focus modes? And he says, that seems too complicated. I'm like, you're buying a different phone and you haven't even tried it.
I think the setup process, I noticed this by it because it asks you to pick the apps and the people. I don't know what I'm doing then. And so it's asking me too soon in the process. And it's kind of just like, that's inevitable because you're never going to come back to it otherwise. But really just separating the home screen thing from focus modes, I can understand why they didn't, because it really ties into that feature so well. But I think it's just like a secondary thing. So they're trying to understand focus modes, but then it's also like, oh, it can hide and show my screens. And the way they kind of hint at it is just hiding screens, not showing ones that are relevant and like having extras. So like, I think that's where it's kind of a disconnect for people.
In essence, showing by omission, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, exactly. And just like, they only think you're supposed to have one or two, and then which still makes sense, but it's kind of like, you don't get as much benefit, or like people don't have. I think a thing that for me is, it's like, I don't do work stuff on my phone. And then sometimes it's like, they don't even use the iPad. So like, it's just like, they don't have that context. Whereas I think if they had it on Mac and it could show desktops and even like different docs or something, or menu bar apps, then you could have like a setup that really changes depending on what you're doing. But then otherwise you can just kind of have the defaults. And it's just like, even in, I have like the great example, but then my implementation is too complicated for people, I think, to grasp. And so kind of having that half version that's the realistic version for people is like, I got to make that kind of video where it's like, here's the deep end and why this all makes sense, but then here's how you can do it and not spend 2 weeks setting up iPad widgets.
Agreed. I mean, because you do get the customization on the mobile devices you don't get on the Mac, but you still get a lot of benefits from focus modes on the Mac. And I trigger them all the time. I'm in a focus mode as we're recording this for the same reason. And I kind of cheat in a way where I do a setup at the same time where I can say on the Mac, set up my screen for podcasting and open the applicable apps and arrange the windows and set the focus mode. And, you know, and you go through and you kind of like use sound source to set the audio for the microphone and things like that. So you can do that, but it takes an extra effort that you don't need on the mobile devices.
Yeah. I think that's kind of why is this like, that's kind of my same implementation, but so the killer thing would also be shortcuts widgets per space. Cause then you could really have like your exact home screen across all of that stuff. It's so close there. The one thing going back to our like ideas from before is if you had stacks inside the Shortcuts app, you could add an entire stack of widgets to your home screen at once instead of doing one by one. And like, that's a major feature that I would use and would save me so much time and would just be built into the tool itself already. And it's just like, I'm like, I see the future, but that's like, it's the same thing of if I worked there, I would be sitting next to them being like, build it, build it, build it. and instead I'm here in my room being like, build it, and not, I got to file that feedback. So that's it. Right after WWDC, I might re-listen to this episode and sit there and just type out a bunch of feedback.
Well, and it is a slow boil. Every year we get some new features, we get some new actions, we get some new triggers, and it is a lot better now than it was before. I mean, I think probably the most improved is Mac Shortcuts. I mean, when Mac Shortcuts first released, it was rough. I mean, I recorded that field guide on Shortcuts for Mac, and I had to reshoot some of those videos 4 and 5 times because bugs would show up and then they'd disappear and then they'd come back and the behavior would change, and just took them a long time to kind of get that sorted. But I feel like things are pretty stable now. And
yeah, I'm glad we recorded this in May and not 6 months earlier. Because I think it's the same thing of, we always kind of forget how it was really rough this fall. And again, just like basic stuff kind of performing poorly. I think that's WWDC in the summer. I'm also going to try to file as much performance related feedback as possible, because I just want shortcuts to work when it comes out. Like the action button is the same thing of, because my stuff time, like I heard you and Rose talking about how people didn't really get into it. And I think that's because it didn't work. And because the users like you and I, who were most excited about it, couldn't make shortcuts that ran with it. And so we were like, I literally was like waiting for a video and it's like 3 months later, I get it. But like, we need shortcuts features for these new hardware features and software features like notes, tagging, or reminders type stuff. I don't even remember which ones don't have it now, but it's like, you can, maybe it's the columns. Like that stuff needs to be there on day one so we can go to town with it the entire summer. And then once it releases, we can all be like, here's 1,000 examples for it, or more like, we made 1,000. Here's the one that's useful, but people to understand it. But it's like, that stuff is pretty brutal and happens pretty consistently. I'm like waiting to do it. And then by the time we get it, it's like the add to home screen thing. Like the momentum is gone already.
Well, I also think that if it's unstable and people who never heard of Matt Casanelli or David Sparks just say, well, this looks interesting. And they try it and it doesn't work on day one. Well, they're gone. They're not coming back.
Yeah. And I think like the same thing with the app developer stuff has to be ready. So, I mean, at least the iPhone stuff was on the Pro. And so I do think there is like the action button in particular has a chance for revival now that they kind of did have a year to fix all the issues. Like I said, it comes out a year later is when it actually is the full implementation of it. But for power users who are excited about it, we have the enthusiasm and Apple like doesn't let us take that and run with it. And that can be pretty frustrating.
Yeah.
But that's why, honestly, I love talking to you and Rose and just the community. I think we all should, we got to find a way to get excited about this beyond when Apple's just releasing that stuff. Cause it's all that potential is still there at all times. And it's really like making it available and just kind of having fun with people too.
This episode of Automators is brought to you by Computex 2024. It's where the world's largest AIoT, that's Artificial Intelligence of Things, and startup shows, and it's happening in Taipei from June 4th to June 7th. Whether you're a seasoned industry professional or a passionate entrepreneur, Computex has something for everyone. I am fortunate enough to be attending Computex this year, and as well as, you know, meeting up with any nerds who happen to be there, I plan on using this as an opportunity to meet some people who can actually help me understand how to integrate AI and this sort of connectivity with all of the things that I actually do at work. At Computex 2024, you can discover cutting-edge technology from AI computing, advanced connectivity, and future mobility. Explore the latest trends and innovations shaping the future of tech. And network with industry leaders at InnoVex. Don't miss the chance to skyrocket your startup with InnoVex, Computex's international startup hub. InnoVex facilitates connections with manufacturing partners and global sales channels through competitions and presentations, ensuring heightened visibility and investor support. Plus, gain insights from thought leaders. Attend keynotes from the likes of AMD, Intel, Qualcomm, MediaTek, Supermicro, NXP, and Delta, as well as workshops led by industry experts, gaining valuable knowledge and insights. If you're ready to level up and expand your network, head over to https://www.computextaipei.com.tw/automators to register now and secure your spot at Computex 2024 from June 4th to 7th. Or just click the link in the show notes. Don't miss out. This is an incredible opportunity to be at the forefront of one of the world's largest AIoT and startup shows. Our thanks to Computex for sponsoring this show and all of Relay FM.
All right. You have some other shortcuts adventures I thought we would talk about. One of the items that I know you're working with these days is Stream Deck. I can't let a show go by that we don't mention Stream Deck. So... what do you do with Stream Deck?
Yeah, I mean, it's been awesome. I feel like I should do a disclosure now that I became an Elgato partner this year, and it's partially just because I've been shouting at them for years, being like, I love the Stream Deck, please use it. And then now I can actually give them direct feedback on it. So like that is pretty awesome. And I did just get like Extreme Deck XL just because I can.
I would say I'm an Elgato. What is it? What's the term?
Partner.
I'm a partner by sake of how much money I've spent with them.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I'll put a good word in if you are interested, but no, it's, I mean, it's, I've always just like, they make good hardware and it is just like solid stuff. So like, even just that they're still around for versus when I first heard about them. And I still think the potential is for Mac users is still so untapped. And in many ways, I think because it's called a Stream Deck and people think you have to be a streamer. So like, I'm going to do a stream. They just released a line of Neo products that are like low cost. And that one that's for the Stream Deck has like extra controls while being only 8 keys. I kind of think this is like the Stream Deck for every Mac user versus if you need more specialized stuff, the other one is like still totally worth getting. But even like to me, the shortcuts widget has 8 slots. That Neo has 8 slots. Like, oh man, that's too perfect. But the cool feature about the Stream Deck software is it can show you a profile depending on which app is activated. And so, first of all, this is what I want on iPad or iPhone somehow is just like show me shortcuts for the app that I'm using right now. You can do that with an automation, but I don't want the notifications every single, like, I don't know, like that could be how the action button works is like, what app is open? Show me those shortcuts. But so for the Stream Deck, when I open an app and then click on it and it comes into focus, my Stream Deck changes to show me the shortcuts for that app just in an array of icons there.
Yeah.
So I have physical buttons for 5,000 shortcuts because I have all of them on there. I spent 2 weeks doing it.
And on the Mac, you can do not only shortcuts, you can have features, or if there's a keyboard combination you always forget, you can just add a button for it. Or like I do the same thing. So the features, they're called profiles, and you can have a profile automatically activate when an app opens. So I've got that for like Apple Mail, OmniFocus, just some of the apps that I'm constantly in. And I just look down at one of my mini Stream Decks because sadly I have many. And the one is the contextual one that always changes based on what app I'm in. Like I'm recording a podcast right now. It knows that I'm in this app. So it's giving me a bunch of buttons to do things I can do while I record a show.
Do you use the middle, like the main size for that one?
Matthew, do you really want to know this? Because
You're in the safe place. This is where we got to go to town.
Okay, so I have 2 XLs, and they're on a stand. And the top one is static. All the buttons on it are always the same. And they have things like lighting features and lock the doors and the zoom controls and different things. And the one below it is the dynamic one that changes based on what app I'm in. But I also have ways to change it like based on context. So if I'm doing Max Berkey Lab stuff, I push a button and everything I need to do in Max Berkey Labs is there. But it's not just shortcuts. Like, for example, I have an editor and I've got his picture on that contextual Stream Deck.
Nice.
If I'm in Labs and I have a little shortcut, well, it's not a shortcut, a script I wrote in Keyboard Maestro that takes the selected file and sticks it in a Dropbox folder that I share with him. And so I just push his face if I've got something and it sends it to him and I don't have to think about it. So yeah, and those are 2 of the Stream Decks. In addition, when they came out with the plus one with the dials? Yeah.
I'm getting that one now.
Cause I felt like, I just have to try it. And I run media controls and my key lights and all the video stuff I do is run off that one. And I just bought the Neo. And I have no good reason for it except that, like, well, I've got everyone, so I feel like I need to be a completionist, and I have it here. And what I'm putting on that one, right? Yeah, the new Neo one that we were just talking about, the white one.
Oh, no, but the 6 key one, too.
No, I don't have the 6 key one. No, I don't.
Yeah, maybe I'll get what you want.
But actually, this Neo is way better because you've got the way to click between different screens of Stream Deck buttons with separate like little capacitive buttons. So you don't, you know, with the 6 button one, Rose and I talked about this on the show, you use 2 of the buttons just to cycle between other windows, right? Or other setups. You don't need that anymore with this.
Totally. And
what I'm setting up with the Neo with is I'm putting all my screen setups, like podcasting, writing, researching, journaling, whatever. And I push the button and the Mac goes bleep, 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 and then I've got everything I need to get to work. It's a contextual shifting machine for me, which is silly. I could have put all that under a keyboard shortcut. I have done that for years, but you know, I kind of like this little Neo and it's got the time on it. That's kind of nice. I catch myself checking the time on it. And
that one is really like just the best of all the other ones in a more compact size. It's cheaper. And then it has those extra controls. So it's, I'm like, I hate now that I like am a partner that I feel like I have to qualify it, but like it is legit. And I think like that it solves a lot of the problems that you can kind of get around the other ones, or like it almost the other, like the Mini almost implies that you have another one that you can control the Mini with or something.
Yeah.
But also yeah. I love the contextual. I basically just haven't gone full to the Stream Deck XL because I also have the other one. And I don't know. I think it, at least for me, I'm trying to share my profiles. And so I figured if you're going to have one, you might just have the main one, not the XL. I use the XL for just apps right now. And then my stream and Zoom controls and those things. So like the same thing. And then the other one is all shortcuts. And I just have 10 folders. I have pages within each profile to let me rotate through and see them. It's fascinating putting my shortcuts onto the Stream Deck because the space in which I place them, like because I don't use up all the spaces, the way I arrange them kind of changes my relationship to like the folder. Because like to like go back another level of a major thing I did this year was like buying in fully to shortcuts, where I have a shortcut to open each section within that app and then do things within the app and then process it and like close it or go access the settings and stuff like that. So there is kind of like a start and end to my workflows and like a spatial relationship between like these ones I want to see all the time. And then there's like two on the second page that I want to access occasionally, but I don't need to see. And it's just like, especially with the Stream Deck, it's just giving physical controls to almost all your software features and
yeah.
really like bringing it out from locked on a screen behind a GUI and a mouse and stuff like that into just like, I can just tap it and do it right away. And shortcuts lets you go from one thing that does like a Stream Deck with shortcuts. That's the only really reason, and like an iPad are the only reasons some of that strategy makes sense, because now I have 16 shortcuts for one app, but I could just have them available and I can rotate through all the different sections of that app, process all of my information, and then I'm just kind of like using the interface when I want to. But otherwise, I have these pre-built workflows that accomplish what I'm trying to get done.
Like when I process email, and this isn't really shortcuts, it's mainly using the built-in mail keyboard shortcuts, but just that I've mapped to various folders. And like I can go through an inbox, delete it, trash it, send it to the same box black hole, or I send it to a folder I call bench, which means I'm going to follow up on it later. Or I've got all these things I can do, and I don't even look at the Stream Deck. I've kind of play it like a piano. I've kind of memorized it, and I can just go through the inbox in just a couple minutes and just triage the thing in like no time flat. And I'm good at keyboard shortcuts, but there's no way I could match that speed with a keyboard.
It's just not necessary to, and like you can just get the combination, like the weird keyboard. Like that's what I'm doing the same thing, but I'm turning those into Apple scripts shortcuts instead of just relying on the Stream Deck part, because then it's also in my menu bar, or I can just use that using run shortcut and put it into a subroutine where like that workflow to set up all the stuff can also trigger that one keyboard shortcut as well. And for me, because then I can just share them with people and it's like, here's how you press, here's how you activate like your memories and photos. It's by pressing Command Option Control 8, but like you don't need to know that. I bet the Stream Deck stuff is like, I'm just kind of cursed by like being the shortcuts fiend that there is so much, there's tons of plugins too there that are like beyond what you can just do with shortcuts as well, which is awesome.
And I should say while we're on the topic, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, but I find all of the shortcuts plugins to be kind of lousy. I what I do is I just export a shortcut as an app on a shortcuts app. And then there is a stream cut action to run app. And then you just attach it to the shortcut. And I have found that is like 100% reliable. Yeah. Some of these plugins don't just work sometimes.
Yeah, I think the plugin, I mean, this stuff is always built off of just looking at your library. And then the thing that I couldn't handle was it just, I have so many shortcuts that if that thing crashes, it won't work. So I just rely on there's a Apple script. I think it's called ASO is the plugin, OSA script. And it just triggers shortcut by name. And that is admittedly not ideal because if I change the name, I have to update the shortcut or the Stream Deck thing. But it basically always works. It doesn't, the same thing. I can share it to someone else and they can install it and run the shortcut that I gave them of the same name versus them having to go add to dock. And the main thing is I would have had 5,000 shortcuts in my dock and I can't do that at scale. So I haven't done that. But that is honestly, that's like another, that technology, like I'm just going to use this to transition into the last thing that I would just want to mention, cause it's awesome, is add to dock for Mac web apps. They brought that from what they added to shortcuts and let you do that with websites now. And the main thing is that you can't control those websites using your shortcuts now, unless you use Apple script. And there's a script that's just open URL in app. And if you just put in, like if I use Letterboxd to log movies and kind of track what I'm watching. And so if I have a Letterboxd shortcut, I can just say, take that URL to open whatever, like my diary of posts, and then run an Apple script to open it in the local Letterboxd app on my Mac. And so what I've done is I took for every app on iOS that doesn't have a Mac app, I've made Mac, wait, what's even the term? I've added it to my dock and and made shortcuts that now redirect me into that shortcut or to that Mac app. So like I have an IKEA app now and IKEA shortcuts that open in the local app on Mac. And I think this is like, I just figured this out like 6 weeks ago or something. And what I haven't figured out is the same thing. How do I make a shortcut that calls this method while not knowing whether or not you have the shortcut installed and also doesn't fail if you don't? So it's kind of like a meta implementation issue there. But I can like share a version in the notes that's just like, if you want an app to open into your Mac app, you can use shortcuts to do it or a URL.
Matthew Casanelli at the hairy edge of shortcuts. Well, you know, Matthew, I do want people to go check out your website and what you're doing at MatthewCasanelli.com. If you're a shortcuts enthusiast, this is, you're going to like what Matt has to share. He's got a membership program, got some great stuff in there, but he's also got a lot of stuff for free. So just go check it out. We're going to put it in the show notes. You can check it out there. I want to thank our sponsors today, LinkedIn Talent Solutions and Computex. For Automators Max, Matt and I are going to talk about AI and shortcuts. I think that's something coming up. It's a little bit of, we're going to be doing a little bit of predicting. So if you're an Automators Max user, you can check that out. You can become a Max user or Max member by going to relay.fm/automators and sign up there. That gets you the ad-free extended version of the show. We'd love to have you. Either way, have a great time. Get automating this weekend, and we'll see you next time.